It may be that you have heard of somebody in the past described as a child prodigy. Well, what does that mean? One definition suggests that a child prodigy is an unusually gifted or intelligent young person, someone whose talents excite wonder and admiration. There are a number of examples of child prodigies that you could access if you are interested in doing a little research. Ran across a fellow by the name of William James Sidis, or Sidis. I'm going to pronounce it Sidis. He was reading the New York Times at 18 months. He was typewriting at 3. He lived, incidentally, in the latter part of the very end of the 19th century and into the first half of the 20th century. He entered Harvard at age 11. Mastered in his lifetime at least 40 different languages. Jay Greenberg, who likes to be called Blue Jay, is a child prodigy, still living. He was writing music at age 3, classical music. At age 12, which is his age now, he has written 5 full-length symphonies. His brain is such that he sits down in front of a computer, he hears the music, and he just writes it. He types it on the computer so fast that the website suggests that sometimes he makes the computer crash. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Probably a Windows system. But the point of the illustration is that he can't get it down fast enough. It's playing in his head. He sometimes works on more than one piece of music at once. He hears this music. Most talented composers might write 5 or 6 symphonies in a lifetime. He's already done that at age 12. Brendan Brimmer, child prodigy who taught himself to read at 18 months, playing the piano at 3 years old, completed high school by the time that he was age 10, finishing his junior and senior years in homeschool in 7 months. See? Can be done. Now I got to tell you, that doesn't sound like my kids. At age 3, my kids were tearing up the house at every available opportunity. At age 9, on one occasion, my kids were running around the house at 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning with their birthday party sleepover buddies, ringing the doorbell because, as they later indicated, it seemed like a fun thing to do. Has your child ever flunked a quiz at school and when questioned about it said, "Well, I just forgot to study"? Ever been called by school officials because your child got into a fight, got sent to the principal's office, or got the report card and it said, "Won't stop talking to neighbors"? I've concluded that having to be told a zillion times to straighten up your room or put things away is not exactly the resume of a child prodigy. I've concluded that neither David nor Jonathan, my 2 sons, qualify as children who are prodigies. You ever kind of wish your child was more like a child prodigy? Cleaning his room up at 18 months? May I suggest to you, as you are, of course, well aware, that the child prodigy is the exception, not the rule. Nor is the life of the child prodigy always wonderful or perfect. William James Sidis had a motto. He said, "The only perfect life is one lived in seclusion." This is the fella who went to Harvard at 11, but he was persecuted there by his peers, made fun of in practically every social setting in which he found himself, became a social misfit, withdrawing into his own shell, died at 46, considered perhaps one of the brightest minds this country has ever seen. You don't even know his name, do you? Not a real good life. In March of this same year, just a couple months ago, Brandon Brimmer, the other childhood prodigy I was telling you about, took his life. He committed suicide at age 14. It is, of course, true that not all child prodigies are maladjusted or live abnormal lives, but they certainly don't represent the norm for children. Raising children is a challenging process, and it's one that can cause the average parent to become discouraged and ask themselves questions like, well, am I doing the right things? Because sometimes things aren't turning out very well. Will we ever get past this particular hurdle that we're dealing with now, myself and my child or children? Does your life ever seem like you just run from one emergency to the next emergency as you raise your children? This morning I want to talk to you about raising children, about parenting. Appreciate the presence of everyone here this morning. I'm going to do something a little bit different than what I normally do. I'm going to run through some of these things in a much briefer fashion than typically I would probably do. I just want to suggest some ideas to you. Most of you are familiar with a series of books that are entitled something or other for dummies. Preaching for dummies. Home networking for dummies. And one of the last sections in every one of those books, to my knowledge, is the part of tens. There's a list of tens in that section, kind of quick summary of some mistakes or things you need to know, that sort of thing. This sermon has the part of fours, because there are four things, four observations that I want to make to you about parenting, particularly to those of you who are parenting small children. The first observation I would make is that challenges and difficulties and even occasional setbacks are normal in the child-rearing process. And they don't necessarily indicate failure on the part of the parents, or for that matter, any kind of long-term failure on the part of the children. I don't want to suggest that these challenges or setbacks are inconsequential, or that we should ignore them. What I am suggesting is that we need to understand that it is not normal for a child to be writing music at age 3, composing symphonies, or doing the kinds of things that child prodigies do. What's more normal is that the average child will occasionally challenge parental authority. Ever happened in your home? The average child will not always be eager to listen to his or her parents. The average child isn't going to get it right the first time. He's going to make mistakes, and sometimes he's going to make the same mistake more than one time. I think sometimes as parents, we begin to get the feeling that our circumstances are unique, that the difficulties that we face in raising our children are somehow different than everybody else's experiences. Be careful of comparisons, because you're usually not getting the same picture when you make those comparisons. And this is what I mean by that. It's easy for us to look at some other family and to see children, and they seem to be doing the right things. They seem to be fine young adults who are doing well, who appear to be mature. They're godly individuals. We have some of those examples here in the auditorium. And yet what we don't recognize or realize is that there were a lot of struggles, a lot of difficulties that those individuals have faced, both the parents and the children, have faced and overcome. We see the finished product. We see the outside veneer, the exterior finishing. We don't know what all went into getting to that point. Unfortunately, as parents, we're more privy to the battles and the difficulties that our children are facing. We see their disobedience from time to time. We see some of their character flaws. We have the inside picture, the inside track on the difficulties that they face. And so it's not really fair, it's not really accurate for us to compare what we're dealing with our children with what we see sometimes in other families. Because we don't know what goes on sometimes in the process of rearing those children. And the fact of the matter is, the same things usually are happening in most households. There are challenges, there are difficulties, and sometimes even setbacks. There are some parents that face unique or special difficulties with their children. I understand that. But all parents face difficulties. It's part of the process. Now, I understand this is probably not nuclear science for anybody or brand new information. I'm telling you things you probably already have concluded. But I will tell you that expectation has a whole lot to do with how well we deal with things. We are certainly better equipped to deal with certain challenges when we expect that they will happen, when we're ready for them. And I think sometimes parents, maybe I should say people become parents, but their perception of what parenthood is like is skewed. They seem to think that little Johnny never is going to do the wrong thing. They laugh about other parents' kids, and they understand that those difficulties exist, but it's not going to happen in my home. We'll be different. Famous last words. The truth of the matter is, that kind of difficulty and those challenges are normal for parenting processes. And so we need to try not to be discouraged when we have to deal with those kinds of things. That's observation number one. Let me suggest a second one to you. Don't let short-term difficulties cause you to lose sight of what I'm going to call the big picture, or if you please, the long-term goal. You know what the difference is between the frontline soldier and the general of an army? The general sees the entire battle. He's aware of the larger objective, and he understands that there may be several different areas of fighting or several different aspects of the battle, but he sees the big picture, and he doesn't focus entirely on any one particular area. But the frontline soldier is concerned primarily with securing his area. He's dealing with a specific battle, and a lot of times he has no idea what's going on in the next sector or behind him or off to the side of the flank in some way. And if we're parents, if we're not careful, we can get so occupied with short-term difficulties, with the battle that's going on today, that we lose sight of the big picture, the long-term goal. And that goal for parents is to prepare children for fellowship with God. Psalm 127 that was read in your presence by Les a little bit earlier talks about the blessing that children represent. In Psalm 127, verse 3 says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." God intends for children to be a blessing to us. A heritage is an inheritance. It is something that is provided to you from your predecessors, or it's something that you provide to somebody else, your heirs. But basically, it's something that's given as a blessing. And this passage says that when you receive children, that's God's blessing to you. That they're intended to be such a blessing. The psalm closes in verse 5 by saying, "Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them." While people measure success in life by a lot of different standards, some of them are economic, others are social or political, let me just say that raising children is one of the most awesome responsibilities that any of us will ever assume. I understand that children are born with certain personalities. You can see that very early in children, that they're not all just blanks that we then impress everything upon so that they turn out like little robots. But the fact of the matter is, we parents have so much influence in determining what kind of people they're going to be and what kind of a contribution or detriment they will be with respect to society. That's an awesome task. The expression, "the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world," doesn't hardly say it strongly enough. What we need to do is remember the overall task that we're engaged in as parents. And that's to prepare our children over a series of years, over a period of time. And each day is just one battle. It's not the whole picture. And today may not have been a good day. I remember particularly, well, not just when the boys were young. Some of those days came a little later. But I remember there were days when it just seemed like all I did was criticize. It seemed like all I did was correct. It seemed like there weren't enough opportunities for encouragement. Do something good so I can, you know, say good job or something. And if you're not careful, you can get wrapped up in those days and lose sight of the big picture. The third principle or observation that I would make to you is that in the teaching process, repetition is a fundamental principle. In Ephesians, the 6th chapter, the Apostle Paul wrote to fathers, he said, "Do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Those are two different words. The word training means discipline, instruction. Admonition has a little bit more the connotation of instruction and warning. Those two words together talk about educating our children. We teach them, we instruct them, we correct them. We are, as parents, educators. A fellow by the name of Ernest Ligon, in a book entitled A Greater Generation, said that there are five steps that are involved in the teaching learning process. And here's what they are. He said they are exposure, repetition, understanding, conviction, and application. I just find it interesting that he says that exposure and repetition are two different steps. How many times have you said something to your children and you really wanted them to get it the first time? And it's discouraging when you have to keep telling them some things, the same things over and over again. But that's what learning is about. Repetition is a fundamental principle of learning. Why would we expect that our children would be any different? But we do. I did. It frustrated me that I would say to them, "Turn the lights off when you leave the room," and they didn't get it the first time. Didn't get it the 50th time. Repetition. We're educators. And what we're doing in our educating of children is not just conveying facts. I will tell you, it's easier to get something on the first pass if all you're talking about is information that you're imparting. If all I want to do is tell my child that the circumference of the world is somewhere around 25,000 miles, he'll probably get it the first time. But that's not what we're doing as parents. That's only part of the process, is the conveying of information. What we're doing is we're molding character. We're changing attitudes, producing character and attitudes in a child, godly attitudes. And that's a much more involved and complex process. It's one thing to learn a fact. It's another thing to turn somebody's attitude around. And that's what we're doing as parents, as educators. It may seem like you have said it 1,000 times. Don't underestimate the value of each exhortation, of each repetition. Someday you will look back and you'll see what the finished product is like and you'll say, "They were listening. I would have never guessed." They'll quote you when you thought they never heard you. Don't underestimate the value of saying it again. And I'm not just talking about mundane things like turn off the lights when you leave the room. I'm talking about spiritual principles, about godly lessons. Don't assume that a child knows just because you've told them before. They're like us. They need to hear it again. Each exhortation can build on the last one. The fourth observation I would make is recognize the value of underlying principles. Parents really need to approach daily challenges in their parenting with strong fundamental convictions about their own behavior and the behavior that they will expect from their children. For instance, one of those convictions might be that my children will not be allowed to play one parent against the other. And every day that law will be the same in my house. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to be allowed. That decision is made up front. We don't decide each day, well, shall we let them play one against the other today? Will we let them get away with it? No, we've already decided that's destructive. It's not beneficial to the family or to the child. Not going to happen. Or for instance, neither dishonesty nor disrespect will be tolerated. I had a little saying in my house, liars never prosper. And the whole idea was, you might have done something wrong, but if you lie about it, you will be punished both for what you did wrong and for the lie. So you don't gain anything by lying. You lose. And that was just a rule that was repeated again and again. That's a conviction that we started with because we thought it was important to cultivate honesty in our children so that we could depend on what they say and not wonder whether this is one of those occasions where they're telling us lies instead of the truth. Or a conviction for the parent to avoid corporal punishment of children while we're angry, especially if we tend to become very angry. Promises will be kept. We're not going to voice empty words to our children. We tell them we're going to do something, then we do that. And we don't make empty promises. Those kind of principles undergird the whole parenting process. And I'll tell you what they do. They provide consistency. One of the worst things that a parent can do is to be really lenient one day and then exceptionally harsh the next day. I'll tell you what happens. The child feels like he lives in the twilight zone. Today I'm in this galaxy. Tomorrow I have no idea where I live or who these people are that are raising me. Because they're acting entirely different than they did yesterday. There needs to be consistency in the parenting process. And that consistency is provided by having these underlying principles that we have considered and thought out, that we've gained from the Word of God, and that we use constantly in that parenting process. Now, having said all that, I want to footnote something. And that is, I do believe that at the same time, parents sometimes need to remain flexible, meaning by that there are small battles that may have to be yielded in order to focus on larger battles. I can remember occasions when there was more than one issue that Debbie and I were dealing with one or both of the boys, but we recognized that one of those issues was very much more important than the other. And although we would like to have had success in both areas, we were willing to take limited success in this battle because this one was more important in the long run. And how do you decide which is more important? You don't lose sight of the big picture. I will confess to you, my sons would confirm this, that there were times when we were very wrapped up. Well, I won't say we. I'll say I was very wrapped up in things that, as I look back now, meant absolutely nothing to the big picture. They wouldn't have made any difference if it had gone one way or the other way. All it did on occasion was create confusion and conflict and stress in the home. It would have been better to let that battle go. It may have been my preference to do something, but it wasn't a question of right and wrong, and it really wasn't significant as far as the character of our sons. And I'll just be frank with you, I didn't always recognize those battles. Sometimes I fought the small ones like they were big ones. But parents need to try to be flexible and remember that sometimes that big battle is really not as big as we think that it is. Well, those are the four principles, four observations. And I really appreciate the patience of those of you who are not currently in the process of either raising children or participating in the raising of grandchildren. But I hope you've not been bored by the things that I've said, because I want to add another thing to that. And that is that those same four principles really apply to all of us, do they not? Is it surprising to you that those things would apply to Christians in general in light of the fact that God describes His children, his spiritual children, in terms of a family. And so the same points that I've been making about raising our children are generally applicable to us as Christians. The part of fours again. First of all, our growth as Christians will be full of challenges and difficulties and sometimes setbacks. I've rarely seen anybody that I was intimately aware of their process, their maturing process. I've rarely seen anybody whose growth was always straight up. But usually what it involved was some steps forward and occasional steps backwards. Sometimes you feel like you're making progress and then there's a step backwards. That's normal. You're not unlike everybody else. I'm not saying it's inconsequential or that we should ignore it, just like I said earlier with parents. I'm saying that's what happens. That's reality. And we don't need to be discouraged by that. We just need to pick ourselves up. And point number two, keep our eye on the long-term goal. It's easy to be discouraged today because of what's happening in the local congregation, because of what's happening in my own life, or because of what's happening in the lives of Christians that I have great respect for, and I find out that they're fallible or weak. And it's easy to be discouraged. Keep your eye on the long-term goal. Repetition is not failure. That's something I have to tell myself. Preachers have a tendency to feel like every sermon has to be brand new fresh. That you have to present something that people have never heard before. Now, I will grant you, I try to present information in ways that are appealing, that are different, that may cause you to direct your attention once again to the same thing. But I'll tell you what, it's the same old gospel. And realistically, we need to keep hearing the same scriptural principles. The repetition of the principles of divine truth is key to our spiritual maturity. We don't get it the first time always. We don't sometimes get it after the 50th time. But we will if we'll keep after it. Fourth, stay consistent in your godly walk by staying true to fundamental convictions that you have gathered from the Word of God. Well, I appreciate your attention this morning. I want to say to you that I salute the parents of both younger and older children. It doesn't make any difference what age your children are. There are challenges to each period of raising a child in that process. There are different challenges. People talk about the teenage years. Let me tell you something. If you're in the two-year-old period, you laugh at the teenage challenges. Every challenge presents its own hurdle. And they're all important. And I would take the opportunity to salute all the parents. One of the things that our society has decided in more recent times is that it is really in some way both demeaning and inconsequential for a woman to stay home, to be a homemaker and spend time with her children and to spend time providing the various things that she does for her family. Nothing could be further from the truth. When the Lord gave the responsibility to parents to raise their children, what He says is that when you do that, you are doing the Lord's work. It's often kind of minimized as not being as important as evangelism or going out and doing other things. But the fact of the matter is, God's given parents that responsibility. And you are doing the Lord's work in raising your children. And so I would say to you, don't be discouraged. There'll be some difficulties, some setbacks, that's normal. Keep your eye on the long-term goal. Repetition is the way of success in teaching. Stay consistent. God's purpose, I talked about the purpose of parents, is to to prepare their children for fellowship with God, both in this world and in the world to come. God's purpose is not much different. It is to conform men to the image of His Son. That's a more specific statement of it. That's how Paul talked in Romans 8. He said God's plan was that He would have many sons, all who would be like the only begotten Son, that is Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. And so God invites us to be transformed from hopeless sinners to justified sons. And to accomplish that purpose, He has consistently made preparations in the history of mankind. We read about them in the Old Testament and the New Testament alike, culminating in the sacrifice of His only begotten Son, a sacrifice for sin, as Gary spoke of this morning. And we become beneficiaries of that sacrifice when we believe in Jesus as the Son of God and we submit to baptism for the remission of sins in His name. That's the instruction that was given to those in the first century who asked the searching question, what shall we do? What can a man do for salvation? He needs to confide in God, believe in God, believe in Jesus as the Son of God, and confess that faith, repent of his sins, and as Peter instructed those on the day of Pentecost, to be baptized for the remission of sins in the name of Jesus Christ. God's purpose is to make you ready for heaven. And if you've not taken those steps, you're still outside the spiritual family of God. You're His creation. But you need to be part of His spiritual family because He's a Father who is perfect and will take us all the way to heaven. If you need to respond to the gospel this morning, we encourage you, we invite you as we stand and sing.